Big podcast coming up this week on the Sports Desk with Ben and Austin. We'll be covering all the latest in the cricket world as a new test squad is announced for the Australian cricket team. We'll also be talking about the worlds of basketball, soccer and tennis. Don't forget Decision Desk, that and more. Coming up on the Sports Desk podcast right here on Sin.
The Sports Desk podcast.
Hello all and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk podcast here on Sin. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi and alongside me and the new intro man himself is Austin Van Gonigan. Austin, it's good to see you keeping a straight face. How are we?
Very well, thank you, Ben. How are you, more importantly, on this fine Sunday evening?
I'm very well, thanks. And I think we've got a big week in sport to talk about, don't we?
We have an enormous week both behind us and ahead of us for a multitude of reasons. And we're going to start that conversation on the topic of cricket.
The Australian cricket team, we've got a new team. Austin, who are the new changes that we've got in the squad?
Wow, well, the axe has been swung at Cricket Australia,
well,
and we've
truly
got a new test squad, a new look test squad. The new faces are Peter Hanscom making his debut, the Victorian batsman. We've got Nick Maddison, T20 Big Bash star from New South Wales. We've got Matt Renshaw. No points lost if you've never heard the name. Matt Renshaw, who was born in the UK and is an opening bat, 20-year-old. We've also got Chad Sayers, who is a tall right-arm fast bowler, who is a little bit older than the others, 29, I believe. So those four new faces for the side and a couple of ring-ins who haven't been in the test side for a little while as well, with Josh Hazlewood and Matthew Wade coming into the lineup.
Jackson Bird, you mean?
Oh, sorry, Jackson Bird. Josh Hazlewood is already in there. I meant yeah. Jackson Bird. There you go. Bright start for us. Hopefully it's a brighter start for the Aussies on Thursday when they take on South Africa in Adelaide. But what do you make of these changes, Ben? It's a dramatic shake-up.
It's kind of made me actually become more excited for the test match, in fact. I mean, you're going to be there for the second day, and I'm hoping for your sake that we actually get to see a second day. But with the new ring-ins, you're liking our chances there. We are going to see a day two. But looking at this squad, I kind of like it how we brought in. It's about time that Hanscom's. It's good to see Victorian get in. I mean, usually the mainstay has been if you're wearing a New South Wales cap, you get in. Victorian, otherwise, you don't get in. We obviously know with Cameron White of such. In the past, but yeah,
Brad
Hanscom, not to mention a few names there. So Peter Hanscom coming off a 200, what was it, 200 and
215, I think.
215, yeah.
In
so
the Sheffield Shield,
very well deserved him to get in. Matt Renshaw has been very consistent in his 11 Sheffield Shield matches, I believe it is 11. So he's only 20 years old. He's younger than what Ponting was when he made his debut by I think maybe 8 months, 10 months. So he's one of the youngest debutants to ever on the baggy green, so it's going to be interesting to see how he goes in new opening partnership there with David Warner. And he's like, if you wanted to compare him to a past Australian batsman, you could, well, even most recently, you could probably compare him to Chris Rogers. He's a very old style type of bat. He'll stay in there and he'll still produce the runs, but he's not like a flashy scorer like Warner is. So I think they may complement each other very well, and they could be a partnership, an opening partnership for years to come, hopefully. Nick Maddison, very good to see him in the squad. If the test selectors, I was talking to you before the show about this, if they were going based on past Sheffield Shield performances and consistency through that, then Nick Maddison definitely would not have been chosen. Obviously, in the past test match as well, he only made 33 and 6. So going off that, not very, very impressive at all. But nonetheless, Maddison is a player for the future. We've seen him in the Big Bash so many times, how he can score runs at a rapid rate, and even at test level, Sheffield Shield level, over the past couple of years, he has done so. So it's good to see that he gets the nod. Chad Sayers, another debutant, potential debutant from South Australia. He's been specifically brought in because of his record there at the Adelaide Oval. His last test match, in fact, at Adelaide Oval, he took 12 wickets.
12?
Yep, in the Sheffield Shield match for South Australia.
That evinces a real ability with a rare ability with the ball as well. I mean, 12 wicket hauls, pretty uncommon in this day and age. We saw Warney take a few. We saw, I think, Nathan Lyon took 12 wickets maybe this time last year in Adelaide. So showing that promise and that potential is a really good sign. I want to pick up on a point you mentioned, which is Matt Renshaw and the very bright start he's made to his first class career. He's averaging over 40 with the bat from 11 tests at age 20 as an opener. which is quite remarkable. Maddison and Hanscom both averaging around the 38 mark. But for Renshaw to average 40 is a real sign of talent and potential. He's the kind of player who not only will sort of complement Warner well, but could score big in his own right. So it's great to see him make the side. They say that batsmen peak at 30. He's 20. So a real change of heart from the Australian selectors, and let's hope he justifies his selection.
And it is a good change of heart from the Australian selectors to actually go with youth. So I'm liking this new wave of players who are coming into the squad. It makes it uplifting and just a fresh new look to the Australian Test team. I think only good things can come out of it.
Absolutely, and we need that fresh new look because we can't forget what's got us here in the first place. We're staring down the barrel of a tumbling down the Test rankings. We currently sit at number 3 in the ICC Test rankings, and we are looking at dropping one or two places after this South African series. So Australian cricket at the Test level is not in a good place. Our players have not delivered what we would have hoped. Darren Lehman made such a bright start in his coaching career, the Australian cricket team. He has a lot to think about, certainly. Rod Marsh resigning as chairman of the selectors. So all of these factors are culminating in a big changing of the guard, so to speak, that much overused expression. But it really is a big rebuild in the ranks of the Australian cricket team and a much-needed one as well.
Yep, and the final one, or the final two there, obviously Matthew Wade and Jackson Bird coming in. So it's good to see Matty Wade in, finally getting back into the Test team. He's been consistent in the Sheffield Shield, so be interested to see how he goes as the Australian keeper now.
It will indeed. He's had a few chances in the past, Matthew Wade, but he is still young, so plenty of promise and plenty of potential ahead for him.
And he has improved in his glove work, which was his only real weakness, the only reason why they had left him out of the squad. So we'll move now from Australia back to South Africa. And Lollygate has taken the news world by storm, and that is Faf du Plessis. He was caught by Channel 9 cameras appearing, it was like a mint or a lolly of some sort in his mouth. He's licking it, putting it on his fingers, and you know, instead of putting saliva on the ball, he was putting that. So yeah, thoughts on that, Austin?
Wow.
He's appealed the decision by the ICC. They wanted to fine him.
Okay, so they wanted to fine him, mm-hmm. and he will appeal and contest that charge.
Yes.
How very interesting. Well, I tell you what, we've all heard of a lollipop in cricket, but this is a different kind of lollygate. This yeah. is a physical tampering incident with the ball.
There's no doubting that this is the reason why we lost the first two tests, Austin.
Well, I tell you what...
you can't deny that, can you?
Well, Ben, you know...
To quote Dale Steyn, we got beaten by the ball, we got beaten with the bat, we got beaten in the field, so we were going to blame it on the lolly.
Yeah, look...
That was Dale Steyn, by the way, in a tweet earlier in the week.
While we're on the lolly theme, I don't want a case of the sour grapes among the Australian team, thinking this is the sole cause of their collapse. This calamitous capitulation at top-level Australian cricket has been caused by somebody's breath mint. I don't fully buy that argument, but we've got to look at this incident fairly. It's against the rules. You make a penalty
no
proportional to the crime, which seems minor, so we'll see. But you were saying before, Ben, you are a cricketer. Why don't you explain for our audience what effect these kinds of ball tamperings can have on the ball and how on earth this is an advantage for the bowling team? So tell us about first what Faf du Plessis was doing to the ball and then explain a little bit about how that might affect the ball.
Well, put simply, he was what you usually do as cricketers, we put our saliva on the ball, just makes it a little bit wetter, and then with that moisture, we rub it on our pants and makes the ball shinier. So we just keep that red, try and keep it hard, so the ball swings. This is like an external type of thing, the lolly. Some people use other, like creams or whatever. That's some other... Yeah, it's been done, so...
Wow, there's a guidebook to this.
Yeah, there is, and we as great cricketers, we love it.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, the ultimate dream is sunscreen on one side and freezing it overnight in the mirror, in the fridge, and then coming back the next day and swinging about 5 metres. So yeah, that's the ultimate dream. But yeah, obviously we can't do that. But no doubt it has an effect. It has a greater effect than what it would be if you just put your regular human saliva, which hasn't been affected by lollies, onto the ball, shining it, keeping on that side. So no doubt it has an effect on the swing of the ball. So,
And when you say the swing of the ball, so one side of the ball has its properties changed in some way, and you keep the other side of the ball the
rough.
Same as it was. You keep it rough. So one side is rough, one side is smooth.
It's done normally like that. It's just that with this, obviously the lolly, it just has a greater effect, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and so when you hit the seam with the ball, you're bowling,
in
you
the
hit
air.
The seam, or in the air, you get unpredictable swinging happening.
It'll just be greater. So you get that normally with if you maintain the ball very well during your innings, normally with your regular human saliva, shining the ball, ensuring that one side is kept as new as possible, and the other side rough, you get that natural swing and variation anyway. But you'd imagine that with the lolly and any such external type, it just has a greater effect on it, and it'll just swing more. And well, that's not what we want.
I think I now know why we find such a hard time finding good quality wicket keepers, because they're having to catch this saliva-encrusted ball. Nobody wants that. Honestly, I'm interested. One more note on the cricket. There is some good news for Australia against South Africa, and that is the Women's One Day International, which is happening in Canberra as we speak. As it stands right now, Australia scored 278 for 4 off their 50 overs, with Meg Lanning, the captain, top scoring 134 off 122 balls. So a great strike rate and a great innings from her. Elise Perry, 95 not out. So our stars really delivering. And stars shining indeed. South Africa in reply after 14 overs, 3 for 45. So Aussies in a good position in Canberra, the Aussie women. And our Southern Stars are holding their heads high despite the failings of their male counterparts.
Yeah, let's hope our male counterparts can follow suitly. All right, so we'll move on now to some basketball. And after Austin went to the Sydney Kings last week, Sydney Kings fell on Friday night to the Perth Wildcats.
Yeah, so interesting. Well, I think they...
On Thursday night, and actually on Saturday night, because I remember seeing it on the news. They, in fact, beat him in the second match.
Yeah, so back-to-back against the Wildcats there for the Kings, and that brings their record to, I think, eight wins, four losses. I think they're 8-4 now, which has them towards the top of the table. But they've had a brutal schedule. 8-4?
Yep, and on top. And
sitting
on top. Pretty.
So Perth Wildcats would be second, I'm imagining. So the Kings had a really tough schedule over the past couple of weeks. They've been to Perth a couple of times. They've been to Brisbane, Canberra, Melbourne, back to Sydney. And Andrew Gaze had a rough patch on his hands a week and a half ago when they dropped two or three in a row, but they've since steadied. So Kings on top. That's what we like to see here. Well, it's what I like to see anyway.
What's your connection with the Kings?
You're a United man?
What's your connection with the Kings, by the way? I'm actually a Kings man.
You're a Kings? Oh, really?
Yeah, surprisingly.
There you go. We're both Kings. There you go. Well, my uncle works for the Kings, Jeff Van Groningen. He is the general manager of basketball there. And I've got a long-standing family connection with basketball. My dad, John Van Groningen, was chaplain of first of the Magic back in the mid-late 90s.
Oh.
And then the Victoria Titans. So he was heavily involved in basketball during those years. I was a mad Titans fan as a kid. Could never really bring myself to support the Tigers, so I was very half-hearted about getting behind United. They were the arch rival, and they're a great team, great history, but they were the rival. So now that my uncle's at the Kings, he was previously at the Bullets, early 2000s, now he's at the Kings, I'm backing the Kings.
And speaking of United, they've got back on the winning track. They defeated the Cairns Taipans 84-79 on the weekend, and they returned Chris Golding returned with 30 points in his return match there, and they also their new recruit Chris Ware is in for United, obviously the replacement there for Cedric Jackson. So those two, Melbourne United will be hoping that they can produce some more results from that two backcourt. So be interesting to see how they're going to go. They've lifted themselves off the bottom of the table. They currently sit 4 wins, 7 losses ahead of the 36ers, who are 3 wins and 6 losses. So,
indeed, and that's the good news for United. They're only going to get better as those injured stars come back into the team. And as you said, 30 points there, a brilliant effort by some of their returners.
36ers, speaking of them, they sit on the bottom of the table and didn't get another win on the weekend. Unfortunately, went down to the Brisbane Bullets, 105-87. And the Bullets move into third position with that after the Wildcats, of course, also the Sydney Kings on Saturday.
Yeah, great seeing the Bullets back. We said that last week. Mm-hmm. And not only are they back, but they're back in contention in a very big way to leap back into existence suddenly and into third place on the ladder. Very in fact, it's good. Considering the Kings finished bottom of the table last year and they're now top, the NBL is so fluid. It's great to see these big shifts in teams' fortunes because it makes it a genuinely unpredictable competition, a little bit like the Big Bash League, and you just don't know who's going to be up in any given year.
So we'll just quickly go through the top four standings here in the NBL. So Sydney Kings lead it with 8 wins, 4 losses from their 12 games played. The Breakers sit in second position. They've only played 10, 6 wins and 4 losses there. The Bullets, like we said, are in third with the Wildcats, also in fourth. And all three teams there, Breakers, Bullets and Wildcats, all sit on 6 wins and 4 losses. So they soon could overtake the Sydney Kings atop the NBL standings.
Yeah, very crowded at the top, and that's what we want to see. We want to see close competitions, and that's what we're getting out of NBL season 16-17.
All right, we'll head across to the United States of America, and the NBA is back, and we're loving it, aren't we? And we'll go through some of the standings. So the Eastern Conference, sorry, Austin, who do you go for again in the NBA?
The Spurs, San Antonio Spurs. Yeah. I've tipped the Cavaliers for this season.
That's right, we both have.
And, the Warriors.
I've got Cavs.
Yeah, that's right. But
it's going to be interesting.
You can tell how much of a fan of the NBA I am. I love basketball. I just don't follow it that closely. Yeah. Continue.
Well, your Spurs, they sit third in the Western Conference, 10 wins and 3 losses, going along smoothly there. Leading the Western Conference are the LA Clippers. I think this time last week they were also leading as well. So 2 weeks in a row they are here on the podcast leading the NBA Western Conference, 12 wins and 2 losses.
Clippers, still a cut above.
And that's largely due to Blake Griffin finding his form. I mean, last season, just riddled by injury, riddled by controversy off the court. He's back and he's at his best. So it's good to see the Clippers doing well there. The Warriors trail them, 11 wins, 2 losses there. And rounding out the 8, so in 3rd were the Spurs, 4th are the Thunder. Russell Westbrook just having a phenomenal season there for the Thunder so far, really carrying the team on his back. The Memphis Grizzlies sit in 5th position, followed by the Rockets, Lakers, and the Trailblazers. So just quickly with the Rockets and the Lakers, Rockets, James Harden, just similar to Westbrook, just having consistent double-double performances, triple-double performances, in fact. So James Harden and Russell Westbrook really putting their teams on their back, the Rockets and the Thunder, respectively. The Lakers are just the new kids on the block, and they are just surprising and shocking the NBA world. They just play with just... They don't play defense. Let's put it simply. It's true. They do not play defense. All the excitement happens on the offensive end, and with youngsters like D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, the future is bright there at the Lakers, and it's actually really good to see that the Lakers are finally performing where they used to be.
It's brilliant to see, and they've got such a proud history, that team. So it just goes to show in sport that you might think things are dire, you might think your team's fortunes will never change, but they can and they do. We see it time and time again, well under the Lakers.
And it was also interesting, there was a video, Luke Walton, he's been largely the reason why the Lakers have risen to, he's the new coach of the Lakers, why they have risen to such fame of recent. D'Angelo Russell, he'd scored. Don't know whether it was a 2-pointer or a 3-pointer, and he was coming off to the bench, and Luke Walton, like a dad, was just pointed to him and say, "Nah, go back to the court and high five every one of your teammates."
Like a dad.
It's true, and it's just the new culture he's trying to bring there in the Lakers, and just none of this individual stuff. So just that real team culture, and I think that's seeing on the court with their chemistry. It's just really good to see. It's got to come on the defensive end, because who knows, they could be a top 4 seed in the Western Conference.
That's so great. I think we went through a bit of a puritanical phase in world sport a few years ago where there was this aversion to celebrating. Oh no, don't get ahead of yourselves. Don't celebrate too hard on the field. Don't give too many high fives. Don't enjoy yourself too much in the rooms after a game. I think that's changed, Ben. I think coaches are alert to the fact that players need to enjoy what they're doing. If they're not enjoying what they're doing, then there's no motivation to play, there's no performance. So I love that, and good on that dad figure you mentioned. That's great. High fives all round.
High fives, both of us. You won't be able to hear it on camera, but we're just giving ourselves a rounding high five. All right, so we'll move now to soccer. the A-League, and our boys, Melbourne City, unfortunately drew 1-1 with Western Sydney Wanderers, quite controversially, in fact. Timmy Cahill scoring the goal in the 55th minute. Who was the player from the Wanderers? It was a controversial offside call. He was offside, but all the Wanderers supporters, nah, it wasn't offside. So Wanderers had most of the play throughout the match. The goal for the Wanderers coming through Scott in the 92nd minute, ooh, making it 1-1 as well. So it was just... It was a great night of football at Spotless Stadium, and it's not too bad to host a soccer event.
I'd love to see it with that different ground setup, because you open up quite a bit of space on the ground for seating and for, well, I guess probably not so much for seating, but it's a different feel and look, that's for sure.
Perth Glory also on Friday night recorded a win defeating Adelaide United 3-1, and Adelaide United still not looking good, are they, Austin?
No, taking a while to find the form that saw them take out the premiership last year, and yeah, they're struggling
on the bottom.
They're struggling, no question about it.
Two draws.
Are the alarm bells ringing just yet, Ben? Are the alarm bells ringing in Adelaide?
I reckon about 5 rounds, and they definitely will be.
Okay,
because I think they're still holding a bit of hope. Because remember, we talked about it last week, last season. They did have this same thing. They started very slow, not this slow, not this terrible, but they ended up obviously winning the premiership. So it will be interesting to tell how they turn out from here in the next couple of weeks. The Wellington Phoenix Melbourne Victory match was postponed due to the earthquakes earlier in the week in New Zealand, so that game will be played at a later date. Mm. On Saturday night, Brisbane Roar brought out their maroon kit, sort of like a State of Origin match. 1-1 with Sydney FC ending their winning streak. And also on Sunday, Newcastle Jets and Central Coast, a 1-1 draw there. So the standings now for the A-League sees Sydney FC still on top, 6 points clear of Melbourne City. And rounding out the top 6 are the Roar, Perth Glory, Melbourne Victory and the Western Sydney Wanderers.
Well, 6 points is a pretty big lead at this early in a season. So Sydney FC, again, we've sung their praises week after week. They keep on keeping on at the top, and let's hope the city can mount a charge as well.
Let's hope Melbourne City can. And Austin, you know what it's time for?
It's time for Decision Desk.
Lovely intro there. Okay, so would you like to ask the first question?
I'll ask the first question. I'll fire away, Ben, because it's been a huge week for the Australian cricket team. And one man in particular has taken a lot of the heat for the poor performances and the poor selection, and that man is Rod Marsh. He resigned earlier in the week, and Ben, I want you to tell me, was the blame directed at him fair?
Yeah. Yep.
Tell me a little more about that.
Well, I think it's been clear in Steve Smith's press conferences that he did not have too great of a say on the team, that they really weren't listening to him, and that his team wasn't really the team that he wanted to be playing with. And obviously in his last one, which was his most heated press conference of late, he said, "This team isn't what I want." So I think Rod Marsh, I don't know what tactic he was going with. I mean, yes, we did so well. I think it was when Mitchell Johnson, the Ashes, 2013, 2014, around that time. Yes, we're on top of the world. We're doing extremely well. However, from there, you'd think it'd be youth that we'd go from. Yes, we've gone from that top, but you'd go with the youth after such great success. And you could tell that those stars were aging. I mean, we obviously gave way to Watson, gave way to Johnson, Shane Watson and Mitchell Johnson and Michael Clarke, another name that's left, Brad Haddon. List goes on. So you'd think that we'd regenerate and bring in the youngsters. So they did that, and then they brought in back Altar. So it's Peter Neville's not that old. No, Adam Voges, I should say. That was, at the time, I mean, why would you... Like, yes, he's done well at test level, but honestly, looking at where they're going, why would you select a player like Adam Voges? And that just throws the whole thing into a shambles, basically, like that youth thing. So Rod Marsh, just his techniques in who to select, his criteria of who to pick, it wasn't up to scratch. And I don't think the captain really should have the greatest say, the biggest say into what the squad and what the team should look like. And clearly, and according to Steve Smith, he's not. So Rod Marsh, I think the blame is being fair, very fair.
Very good. That's a very well-reasoned response, and I can't criticise any facet of it. I think...
What are your thoughts on it?
Well, there's never too much... I don't think you can heap too much blame on one individual. I think there's always a fall guy in this scenario, and in this case it's been Rod Marsh. The fact is there's a culture that's been built up around expectations. Players will play T20 and won't play county cricket, won't learn international conditions, will be constantly on the road in Australia and in sort of limited conditions overseas, which will not prepare them adequately for tests. We've had problems with team unity. We've had problems with selection among them. We've had problems with player development. All of these things contribute. You can't blame one person. Having said that, you do have to make tough decisions.
Okay, so my question to you, Austin, we'll stick with cricket. Following these new test inclusions, does Australia win the third test?
No. As much as I want to see us win, I can't really see it happening. South Africa, they're disciplined, they're mentally tough, brilliant with ball and bat. Adelaide is one of those tests that Australia has actually kind of struggled with historically. Of all of our local tests, we've been, in a sense, I think we've been most vulnerable on Adelaide. It's a really unpredictable pitch as to what's going to happen. And typically, it tends to be a pitch where the ball doesn't bounce so much, in my experience, well, in my sort of limited memory. It doesn't bounce so much, which doesn't favour our tall quicks. It's a spinning pitch. We haven't been strong in spin since Shane Warne's retirement. So that gives international competitors an edge there, and it's an edge that I think the South Africans will exploit against our young lineup.
I'm going to be a bit of an optimist. I hope we do win, but yeah, it's very unlikely. It's just going to be interesting. I reckon it's going to take us a couple of tests to gel. So I hope they actually stick with this squad for the upcoming Pakistan series. The three test series there. So it'll be interesting to see how we do go against South Africa. But yes, it's obviously going to take us time. And we don't want, with this new selection panel, them chopping and changing constantly. We want to keep a same squad, a same young squad, and then for them to stick with it. Mm. Have faith in them and they will produce.
That's absolutely right, especially when you're playing on a turning wicket like Adelaide. But you've just got to persist with some of these players. You have to sometimes sit down and say, you, Matt Renshaw, are going to play six tests. You're guaranteed. It doesn't matter what scores you're going to make. You have to relieve the pressure of immediate performance and expectation from these players. The rebuild's on. Forget about rankings for now. Let's just find the next nucleus of our test cricket side. And we hope that some of these players are in it. All right, question two for me, Ben. Guess what's this Friday? Coming up this Friday, the 25th of November.
Tell me, Austin.
It's the AFL National Draft. Did you know that?
I completely forgot about that.
Did you even remember that?
Do you even
care about it?
Yes.
I want to ask you, given that this has crept up on us all...
I didn't realise it was this Friday.
Do we have football fatigue?
Do we?
Do we have football fatigue? Do you have football fatigue? Are you sick and tired and fed up of me talking about the Bulldogs?
Nah.
No.
No, we don't. We love footy.
Yeah.
Can't get enough of it, to be honest.
The look of excitement on your face when you learnt that the draft is this Friday.
I've been reading about the draft, like who Brisbane's going to select, and I just had no idea that it was on this Friday.
It's coming up.
Oh, my God. I'm excited. I'm pumped now.
It's great.
I mean, can you get enough of football? I mean, at times you probably can be a little bit sick of it, and it's only during the season, maybe around round 11 and 12, and it's only... That's only if your team is doing as poor as what we have been, Brisbane. That's who I've been speaking of. But if you're winning, you're loving it. But yeah, nonetheless, you can't get enough of football. And you really miss it when it's not on.
I totally agree
with that. I think this is the time, like right now, when it's on. I think it's the period just after October when there's not too much. So like the basketball, soccer seasons haven't really got kicked into gear yet. I think that's when you start to think, geez, I really miss footy. And then January, February, just like, I want it back. You want footy back. You can't get enough of it. It's true. It's our game. It's Australian football. It's the best.
I agree 100%, and I'll be watching who's picked up in that draft with great interest.
Okay, my final question to you, Austin, and it's related to the Sydney Kings. Now, there's been a lot talked about during the week about how they've just been splurging cash to all these players, and it's been significantly more than any other team in the NBL. Has their recent success, Rice's success in the NBL, been fair?
I think it's no different from Melbourne City's success in the A-League, and it's no different from Manchester City's success in the EPL going back 5-6 years. It's been built on a significant investment, but ultimately a very smart investment. And the reality is you can't just throw money at problems and hope that they're resolved. Case in point, a team like Collingwood or a team like... You can even cite Melbourne City as an example, because the resourcing that's gone into them would warrant a degree of success they haven't yet achieved. Now, the Sydney Kings haven't yet achieved a degree of success that we can really talk about and really be proud of, but they're making all of the right noises. They've got a great team. They've taken a bit of a calculated risk on a coach in Andrew Gaze, who hasn't coached at that level before, but who is proving himself emphatically. And they're doing all of the smart things, not just the expensive things that contribute to team success. On that basis, I think it's great. I think it's fair. Brisbane Bullets had a big injection of funds as well, and so you see that trend happening in other clubs. I think the Sydney Kings are far from the only ones who have benefited from new owners and new benefactors.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was kind of annoying listening to all these news reports through the week, like, oh, it's not fair this, not fair that. I mean, yes, it's the signings that they've had has been great, and obviously it's been a huge asset to them, and it's like you said, it's been nothing different, too different to your Melbourne City and your Manchester United of all those leagues. I guess the only thing is it's because there's been such controversy also about Melbourne City. As Australian sports followers, we're not used to these big teams throwing around cash in our Australian leagues, domestic leagues. I mean, we're just not used to it. And I think that's why it's just shocked us, I guess, in a way. So I think we'll come to terms with it, and it can only be a good thing, I think.
Mm, that's right. And the NBL is far from a laissez-faire open system. There is a soft salary cap, which means you can, in theory, spend as much as you like, but over a certain level, you actually pay essentially a salary cap tax. So I don't know what the margin is, but if you exceed your soft salary cap, for every dollar you're spending on player salaries, you have to put a dollar into a bucket, which goes to all the other teams. So you ultimately end up subsidising other teams' growth and development through hiring all of these expensive players. So it's a self-regulating system. It's designed to equalise. It's not the same level as the AFL, but it's a happy medium between that and, say, European soccer, where anything goes.
Well, Austin, that's it, I believe.
That is it indeed. It's been a wonderful privilege being in your company, Ben. Thank you so much for enlightening us with your wonderful insights into the world of sport.
And thank you as well, Austin, for your insights into this wonderful thing, sport. And don't we love it here on the Sports Desk? You've listened to the 20th of November edition of the Sports Desk podcast here on Sin with Ben and Austin. You'll be able to catch our podcast whether on sin.org.au. We've got a new URL. You just find us, go under FM. We don't know ourselves too well, but yeah, you'll find us there. We're also on Omni now. Omni.
Exciting development.
Yes, I'm uploading the show on Omni now, and soon, hopefully, we'll get the shows up on iTunes, okay? So that's pending approval. So do keep listening to us. Do keep tuning into our wonderful voices, and we will tell you where you can access us on a wide range of platforms, because Austin, unfortunately, only has 1 month left. He's only got 3, possibly 4 more shows left.
I'm rapidly encroaching on the old age of 26. Very and when I turn 26, they boot me out of the studio with my walking cane and all, and I have to leave Sin, which is very sad. It is Student Youth Network, so it should legitimately be students and other young people. So I'll shortly be violating the core criteria, the very reason we exist. So you won't hear my voice much longer. For many of you, that'll be a blessing. For some of you, hello, Mum, you might be a little bit sad. But, Ben, can I just say, I'm relishing the last few weeks with you, and I can't wait for next week as well.
I cannot wait for next week as well. So you just tuned in to the Sports Desk podcast here on Sin, where we talk nothing else but sport, the games which unite the people and the world.